until the end of time. I'll be there for you. You are my heart of mine. I truly adore you. You've got one day struck me blind. Your beauty I'd still see.
Your beauty I'd still see.
Love's too weak to define just what you mean to me.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Donald with Nashville Hits Collecting Dust. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm pretty fired up today for a couple of reasons. One, I kind of felt like I got a break. Caitlin's over there. She knows that. She didn't have a mic. But my chewy, super sick Kevin McCarty is not here. And I know I should probably be bummed. But honestly, he's the guy that just cracks on me all the time. So it's almost like I got a day off, you know? Kevin, if you're listening, sorry, buddy. But nah, he really wanted to be here, but he had the big boy job today come up and was, really hated it. So
I wonder what that's like,
big boy right? jobs. Yeah, right? I don't know. I've had the big boy jobs. I've never had a salary and I never had benefits. Let me introduce you guys first so people think that, wait, who's the voices in the background? No, I am sitting here with the Shadow Boxers, and I know your names because I created an acronym, right?
That's right. That's right.
With Scott, not only your last names, Scott, Matt, and Adam.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
SMA.
SMA.
That's how I came up with it.
Nice.
And so that's who you're hearing in the background. I don't know if they know your voice specifically yet because you're just kind of dabbing in there. But let's go. Why don't you give me – this is what I like to do, right? Yeah, and this is me coming from the sales world. You don't know, like as the big boy job, we call it like the elevator speech.
Got right.
It. Oh, you do know the elevator speech. Great.
Oh, yeah.
So like, you know.
I went to business school.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to that. But why don't we do that? And
that was Adam, by the way, for the record.
Okay, good. So we'll start with you, though, Scott. Kind of like, just tell the audience who you are in the most distinct Scott voice so they know, oh, yeah, that's Scott every time I hear
this
him.
Is Scott. This is my voice.
Perfect. And that's all I need. Matt, next. Okay.
This is Matt. This is my radio voice.
I'm going to talk. What's your real voice?
I kind of want to use my
the same.
Yeah, it's kind of the same.
Oh.
It's a little more dramatic.
It's a little more. Is this this is dramatic?
I feel like the radio. This is Scott again, by the way. The radio voice is like you really got to hit the monotone and just kind of keep. And then you start your sentences high and then you dip it. And then
I feel like I'm getting media training.
People have told me that I have a nice radio voice. How's it translating today?
That's Adam.
This is me, Adam.
I'm gonna be honest. That
no, his is actually the radio voice.
I feel like we all.
It's got a low timbre. I'm a little sick. Okay. So that's actually helping.
We kind of have low speaking voices. See,
like but we sing way high. That's
really
our elevator
weird.
Pitch, by the way.
Guys, I wish I had my headphones right now. I'm kind of just being lulled into a little mesmerized.
We're bringing a very
calm.
You've
done this before.
Right. Don't listen to this if you're driving.
Right. All three of y'all sit there and they're like, watch, we're about to take over. And I'm like, okay.
I don't think we've accomplished what you asked us to do, which is distinguish our three voices kind of talking over each other.
No, you actually all sound, but you
all sound just lulling.
No, but what you're proving is without even hitting a musical note is that y'all sound very well together.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Hey.
Already, you can tell that, you know what, I bet if they hit some harmonies... Probably sounds pretty good.
Well, the funny thing is for us is that actually we have very different voices.
Mm. Singing voices.
Well, kind of speaking too, but well, maybe not apparently. But they all sound very unique individually, but when the three of us sing together, and this is what we found out from the very beginning when we first started singing together, is that we create a really natural blend. The parts fit well together and like, It just made sense from the beginning, which was in 2008, I guess, is when we first started singing together.
Yeah, I tell you, I grew up South Alabama, and my papa, granddad, whatever you call your grandparent, was the minister of music in a Southern Baptist church in Georgia, actually.
Mm. Wow.
But grew up in the musical world of like harmonies.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And at a very early age, I knew two things. For one, that I loved music. And the second one is that I can't sing at all.
That's good to know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't know that as a small child because when you grow up in that setting, they're going to put you on stage and you're going to sing. Right. Solo.
That's also good, though. So you were just singing.
Well, so here's what happened. I've told this before, but the thing is the first time I did it, I nailed it. Like
so you think it's a head thing?
Well, it was either that or a puberty thing.
Oh.
So when you're, you know, a small child and you're singing, you know, the kids' songs, and then all of a sudden you hit that age where you're like, God, that went a little higher than what? And then, you know, the voice cracks and, hey, right. Maybe I should have pushed through, but here's what I'm saying. I found out on stage in front of everybody when everything cracked at once the whole time, and it absolutely devastated me.
So before that, though, you were like a young Michael Jackson?
Pretty much. I was a star.
You were a star, and then it just...
I really haven't sang since, I'm being honest. It scarred me. You know, that kind of stake in the ground.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know why this is not therapy, really. It's not.
No, this is good.
This is good.
This is good content.
Sounds like you have some deep emotional trauma.
Yeah. We got to talk about this.
Yeah, we should. Well, it just, you know, goes to show that even very minor stuff, you know, can actually affect you way on down the line.
It's always the little things. Right. It's always the little things.
But I did realize I could talk.
Right.
So, you know, I stuck with talking. And I do have a passion. I tell everybody I have a passion for music. I just don't have the ability.
Cool.
And I'm okay with that. So I'll talk and let you guys do the music stuff. But I do love listening to just great harmony music. Yeah. I grew up, you know, with the ensembles.
Yeah.
Right. And the altos, tenors, and all that good stuff. And so my papa, he was one of those music, like, I don't think he had like this unbelievable, phenomenal vocals, but he just had an energy to you. So even if it was a slow song, he's speeding it up, you know, and that was just the energy to it, you know. But he was all about 5'5", but he was one of the biggest men I knew. So it was a great memories. But I don't know how I got into that kind of rabbit hole. Oh, harmonies. Yeah, that's right.
So, and your voice cracking again. Just to bring that up again.
Many years of suppressing it, now it's all back.
But
up.
You needed something that traumatic to set you on your path, because now you're using your speaking voice.
That's true. That's a great point. I've always wondered, though, I mean... I'm assuming I don't know your story. So when was it that you guys hit notes as individuals and said, yeah?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up like ensembles, because when we first started singing together, which was 2008, we were in college together in Atlanta. And we recognized that there was this sort of special blend that was happening, and we loved singing together, and we wanted to form a band, and we realized there weren't really any. First of all, there aren't a lot of bands anymore. Right. It's a lot of solo artists or DJs or duos. There's just not a ton of bands, especially in the pop world. And certainly not a lot of like vocal ensembles.
Right.
And that was always something that was unique about us, and always something we weren't willing to sacrifice. Like that, we've always said the lead singer of this band is the three of us singing together. That's the lead singer, is that sound. And, you know, a lot of the music we grew up on, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, even the Beatles had like amazing three-part harmony. And that's not something they're like usually known for, but they really did.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been the thread since the moment we started. We've gone through every genre imaginable in terms of what we write and perform and cover, but it's always been the three-part harmony that's been the tie-through of everything.
Have you guys ever individually, I guess y'all met in college... but you went to college for music.
No. We went to Emory in Atlanta, which is not a music school. We all went for individual, independent reasons. Adam mentioned earlier, he was in the business school. I was a philosophy major. Matt was a psych major. We all went to Atlanta to just do something new for all, like I say, different reasons. We met randomly, and the fact that there weren't that many musicians there made it really easy for us to meet and to realize that, you know, we were sort of alone in this, in our musical passion. So let's just do this. If we were in a school, if we were at a Belmont, for example, where there's so many great musicians, I don't know that we would have met and decided, yes, this is the thing. Let's do it. Let's not turn back.
Yeah.
'Cause there maybe would have been other candidates. We would have maybe tried to look into other players instead of each other. So
were y'all friends first before
friends
y'all
first.
Decided?
Friends first, yeah.
So, hey, we're going out. It's Friday night. For whatever reason, one of you is kind of singing in the bathroom. The other one's in the kitchen, hits a note, and then the other one comes in singing. And you're like,
that'll be the Lifetime. Yes, the Lifetime movie version.
Yeah, exactly. Because the real version was so much nerdier than that.
We were just, you know, you go to college, you're trying to meet new people, and you see who has similar music tastes, and that's how it happened. We found out that we have similar tastes in music.
Scott and I met in theory class.
And
so I think Scott approached me because I was wearing a Steely Dan shirt one day, and he was like, all right.
And it's a very, it's a classic, mostly, most of the students in the class were classical music students.
Gotcha.
So, and then this guy's wearing a Steely Dan shirt, and I'm like, okay, so this is, I have something in common with this guy, at least musically. So,
yeah.
And then we started kind of finding a practice room after our class and go and playing piano together. And this is a song I've written in high school. This is a song I wrote in high school, and we started singing together.
Oh, and then Adam and I met because, like Scott was saying, we all went to this school for different reasons, but at the same time, like, music was still in the back of our minds and was still extremely important to all of us. So when I got to school, I was like, all right, I gotta find other musicians. I gotta find other people who are on the same level. So you could see other people's iTunes libraries in dorms, and Adam Hoffman came up first, and Adam Hoffman's music came up first. I was like, oh, this guy did music in high school. I straight up stalked him. And slipped into the DMs on Facebook.
Slipped the DMs.
On Facebook.
Before that was even a thing.
We went on a date, what, 2 days later?
2 days later. We went and saw Across the Universe.
Yeah. Actually
with,
did.
With my roommate. And that's how that relationship started. So, like, pretty much all of these, we all became friends because of music.
That's awesome. I've always wondered, and I don't know if there's an answer that you can give, because, I mean, and I guess I say this because the majority, I guess, of people that I talk to, whether they're friends or been on the show, are individuals, you know, pursuing a goal and a dream. And it's hard to say, well, hey, what's easier, individual or three, right? Because I don't know. I don't know if there's something you can answer. I just know that a lot of times, yeah, individuals feel like it's just them against the world. But at the same time, they're not having to really negotiate with, you know, or collaborate all the time. So, you know, you guys, I think you mentioned that you're friends first, but you better like each other, right? Like,
that's a good question though, because I think it really depends on the situation. I think that it's a higher risk when there's more than one person. The three of us having to delegate and each do specific things requires communication.
Yeah,
and it requires, you know. The payoff, though, is three times better, I think. Like, if we all... These guys can do things that I can't do by myself. Mm. I know that I... And we all know that we each can't be as good as the three of us are together. But we can also be three times worse than a solo artist could be if we aren't working together. So it's this constant need to check ourselves and make sure that we're pointed in the right direction.
Yeah.
And if we can do that... Which is the biggest task of this band, is making sure that we're all on the same page about things. But if we are, then our message, I think, is three times stronger than it could be as a solo artist.
It's kind of like, a marriage in a way. Like, you know, marriage is hard. No one denies that, but they still get married because the benefits outweigh the, I don't know. Cons?
Yeah, I've heard that. I've never been married, so yeah, I can't speak from experience. Yeah, but right. I know exactly what you're talking about. And honestly, from just a friend standpoint, and you know, I've seen it with some, just friends of mine. There's so many lessons I think that I've learned without being them, but having that kind of friendship. That it's weird because you can't imagine exactly what it's like until you're there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You think you can, I think, you know, but I know in a lot of situations, it's like me and a buddy of mine. And then before it actually happens, you have these conversations like, man, if and when this thing happens, I will always, or I will never. Right. And then 5 years later, you're there and you're like,
oh my God.
Yeah. And it's just a different perspective, some good, some bad. Right. You know? So, but, one of the things that I've always kind of admired and respected, good friends of mine, like Tyler and BK, you know, for Georgia Line, they're, you know, obviously a very successful band, and it's one of those things where, you know, I think it's, but you kind of see the dynamics of them as a duo living life together, not just being a band, because they're both married now, right?
Right.
And they're both, like, there's still a life that comes into it, but the music and the career is the same, and to see how they kind of evolved, and man, it's been I've learned a lot. Let me just put it that way, because, I think a lot of people think they go on stage and, you know, just have fun, and then it's all, you know, roses from there. Right. And gosh, you know, life on the road as a musician, I'm telling you, I went out and the first 5 day run I ever did, first day I was out, I was like, man, the road, I was born for the road. Like, I love the road.
Yeah.
Second day, I'm like, man, I love the road. Third day, I'm like, road's good. Right. You know, yeah. And fourth day, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I'm ready to go home.
And that was just 4 days, right? Yeah, so yeah. I've always said, you know, music in that passion is a lifestyle. It's, you know, it's,
yeah.
It's really
it's so true because we've been a band now for 9 years and we've played hundreds of shows. We are, you know, we played probably 300 shows before we ever got in a studio even. Mm-hmm. And we started touring like the week after we graduated from college. And it's just not the like glamorous thing that, you know, as a kid you think touring will be. It's really,
it's playing
brutal.
For six people in Charlotte.
Right.
On a Tuesday.
And being okay with that.
Because from my standpoint, if you're on that stage, like you're rich. And
right.
I mean,
listen, no, we're loaded.
Yeah.
When we set out, you know, to tour, none of it we would change. I mean, all of the loading in, loading out, the sleeping in one hotel room, all of us. You know, it's all part of the process. We think that now we're coming into our time, you know?
Yeah.
We released a song 2 weeks ago, or last week, I guess. Our first song of our new sort of studio experience, our new sound, and everything's sort of coming in. And that song that we released, Hot Damn, wouldn't exist. And all of the songs that we recorded with it wouldn't exist, and where we are right now wouldn't be where we are if we didn't have those rough nights. That's all sort of conditioned us to be able to handle whatever's going to come our way now. I don't know how a lot of bands or artists who are, you know, really young and don't have that experience can handle it. I don't think they're built to last.
Yeah.
Because there's so much experience, there's so many things that are going to come at you as an artist, and we've already dealt with a lot of things, you know, yeah. And we have a lot of prior experience to draw on, which is helpful.
People don't think about how you get on the stage for an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours a night. There's 22 other hours in a day. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on. And
I've always wanted to, I'm going to quit talking about this and actually do it one day, I promise. But I was going to do this toll-free number. It's called Nashville, We Have a Problem. Kind of like Houston. You know, whereas, because how much, like, let's be honest, it's usually funny after the fact. But I mean, how much thing, like one time, I don't know, there was this band friend of mine, Blackjack Billy. They're awesome. I love them. But they literally had the whole trailer stolen. Somebody just picked it up off the back. It just, jeez, like 10 geez, hours before geez. A show.
Oh, man.
And at the time, don't you know, it was like, yeah, I mean, they laugh about it now, but that's like one of those Nashville,
we've seen so many things like that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should do that. That's
I
a
know,
good
right?
One.
And then like you call in and you're like,
tour horror
let's
stories.
See if we can figure this out and get all of Nashville together and like problem solve and fix it. You know, Nashville, we got a problem. All right, let me get my Nashville Pete's on it.
That's we'll smart. It out.
So, and a lot of great stories come from it, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, who you are as a band, as people, as an artist, comes from your experience. Yeah. I actually heard one time that, I don't know if this equation always works, but they said, you know, it's pretty sound that the amount of time it takes you to quote-unquote make it, if that's like as exponential as how long you would actually be successful. So for instance, if you know, it only took you a year, you might be famous or, you know, big for a year. But, you know, it's an exponential thing. If it took you 9-10 years, then it's, right? It's almost that.
That feels good for us.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We like this.
We like this.
Well, actually, I would have never said that if you're like, yeah, we just started.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Started last month.
Yeah, right? Well, and you talk about how, I guess, y'all have evolved musically. And, you know, obviously, you grow up, right? And you become different people than you were in college. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And you just release, you know, your first song. I don't, you know, I think in a lot of ways, I just kind of want the audience to know like who y'all are individually. And then obviously as a band and then what it is that you're really passionate about, like your why, you know what I mean? It's like, I think a lot of people know that they have goals. And a lot of times I think goals are kind of given to us culturally, right? Meaning, well, if you're this and this and this, then you are happy and successful. And then we don't know any better, right? Until we maybe get it and then go, crap, is that it?
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, in a lot of ways, I usually, this is not one of my questions I'm about to ask my three, but there's like this kind of, especially with three of you guys, like this vision, right? Like, this is why we do what we do, almost. Like, here's our why. Sure, we want to pay the bills, right? Sure, yeah. We want to, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, the it. But at the end of the day, you're here and doing what you do. You wouldn't do it if it was just little, right?
We wouldn't do it if it wasn't the thing that makes us happiest in the world.
Yeah.
When we sing together and play, we know that despite anything else or whatever circumstances are going on, we wouldn't want to do any other route. We wouldn't want to have taken any other route. Sometimes we will entertain the thought, what would we be doing if we weren't doing this? And we never have an answer because this is the only thing it could have been for us.
Yeah.
And
does that take some of the pressure off?
I think it's comforting.
It's like
this is what it is, right? Until the wheels come off.
People asked us when we were in college. People ask us now. You know, what's Plan B? And we were all just sort of like, there. I mean, once we met each other, it's like, it's funny because as we were saying earlier, like we all went to school for different things, but then once we found each other, like there was this, I don't even know if it was hidden, but we all wanted to be doing this.
Yeah. Right.
It was a different, you know, in different points in college, sort of realizing like, oh, this is the Shadowboxers is what we want to do. But once we got there, there was really never any hesitation.
Our one goal, I think always, and that hasn't changed no matter what, you know, success we've technically had, has been if we can continue to play music with each other and through that like bring joy to people, that's the goal for us. That's it.
Yeah.
If we can do it, you know, if we can make our lives work and do this, then that's all we want to do. And as big as that gets or as little as it ends up, that hasn't been the focus of what we want to do.
Has there been I don't know if crossroads the right analogy, but you know, throughout the last 9 years, had there come points where it's like,
yes.
So that's always been our vision, what Adam just said. Mm. And there have been points when we realized that, you know, the momentum luckily for us has always been on an incline. Even if it's a small one, we've always been pushing towards the right direction, which is, you know, becoming more stable, and able to play and perform and make music, you know, in the foreseeable future. There have been times where we've sort of plateaued and we have other musicians that we have that depend on us financially, and it was a question of how much longer are we going to do this. At one point, I remember we had just finished. We started out doing an opening tour for the Indigo Girls, who are based out of Atlanta, and we shared a manager. So it made sense. We did that for 2 years after we graduated. And then it was, well, what are we going to do now? We need to make our own statement. And we were sort of in this in-between period. So we put out some covers on YouTube just as a holdover for our fans to give them something to listen to that wasn't recorded music, recorded original music. And we were trying to figure out in the meantime what we were going to do. Yeah. We were living in Atlanta, and that was kind of the one time where we didn't see any positives ahead of us. And we knew that we had something great. We knew that these covers we were putting out were great, and you know, it was getting a couple views, but it wasn't, you know, in the splash that we wanted to make that was necessary for us to sustain.
I remember we were sitting in Scott's parents' kitchen because we had a show in Nashville, so we were crashing at his parents' house, and I was sitting with our bass player Carlos, and he was like, "How much longer do you think we can do this?" And I was like, "Man, I don't, like, maybe another month or so."
Wow.
Like I don't we just can't. We're empty.
And that was financially speaking, or just financially, emotionally, physically?
Like our management we weren't happy with. Yeah. Our record hadn't done well. There was just nothing, you know, we just didn't see a path forward. Ooh. Like as badly as we wanted there to be one, we couldn't find one. And we were in a real rut.
What happened?
That same night, so I mentioned this cover series that we did.
Yeah.
One of the songs we did that was a song that we had released, by release, I mean just put on YouTube, the month before. This was November of 2015.
I just want to interrupt this story just for 1 second, just to preface this. All these lulls where we feel like the incline has sort of gotten close to plateauing,
right.
Pretty much right when those moments have occurred, there have been great moments of serendipity, and this right. is one of the greatest ones that Scott's telling.
I was going to ask that because it was like that night, you know, so.
Yeah.
Literally the same night.
Same night. We play a show at Thistle Farms or Thistle Stop Cafe on Charlotte here in Nashville. We come home and the cover that we had posted the previous month was a Justin Timberlake song, Push Your Love Girl. And he tweets it and the link to the song and says something like, you know, every now and again you come across something great. Congrats, guys. You took it and made your own. Great job. Whatever he said. Something like that. And all of a sudden, our you know likes and follows and things start coming into all of our social media. And we're like, how did he find it? We don't know. Yeah. The next morning, we wake up and he sends us a direct message on Twitter and asks to meet us when he comes through to Atlanta on his tour, which he just started at the time. So that was obviously... Hold validate. You can dive in on that if you want.
JT slid in the DM.
Yeah. Yes.
Legit.
Yeah. Justin, if you're listening, you can slide me a DM. Just slide in the DM.
Blue check mark.
Yeah. It's like legitimate.
You just got to trust it.
All right. I just had to preface because you made it sound very kind of nonchalant. And I was like, well, that's not a very nonchalant thing.
Well,
that's
He slid in there.
He slid in there real easy.
Just slid in the DM. That's awesome.
And also, this happened on December 5th. I guess it was 2013, and the reason we were... 14. Yeah. And the reason that I know that is because we played this show at Thistle Stop because a woman named Carolyn Snell was trying to get us in front of a woman named Allie Harnell to maybe help us out for the future, and they now manage us, and they are called 12-5 Management because of that night.
Very cool, and I hear this story a lot, and I can tell you that it's happened in my own life, not in the exact same way, except for the concept is kind of the same, and I think this is kind of what I want to maybe reiterate to whoever's listening. It's you guys knew, right? It's not like you were just kind of rolling the dice. You felt it, you knew it, right?
And that, right.
You said, hey, look, you know, it's kind of till the wheels come off, right? It wasn't like you were trying to press or make something happen that really wasn't there. Doesn't mean it's going to be uphill or downhill. You know what I mean? Right. It doesn't mean you go from A to Z because you know, right? Just because you believe it. But I do think that I do want to reiterate that I guess most of the time, I don't want to say all the time, but it's like if you just keep going, these things happen, right?
I think that
you can't plan for. It just...
I think there's a couple of things on that. One, I think that there have been that's the thing that I think most people don't... It's a matter of endurance, more so than it is talent. There's a lot of really talented people in this town. Mm-hmm. And you look at an actor like J.K. Simmons, who had his break when he was 50-something, and now he's a big actor. I mean, it's just, can you outlast people? When I was in high school, there were players who were better guitar players than I am, but I'm still playing guitar and they're not.
Right.
And it's just because I've heard comedians say there were a lot of guys funnier than I was, but I just kept doing it. And you, as you keep doing it, you get better, and you just have to be able to take it on the chin and keep moving forward. And next thing you know, you look around and there's only a few people doing it, and that increases your chances of getting a break. So, and then another thing about that is with the Justin thing is we knew we had something good. We put in the work to make sure our product was as good as we could get it. We just kept putting stuff out.
Right.
Justin found it. He saw us doing what we were singing together with some instruments in a room. It was the most natural thing to us. We didn't put a big budget behind we didn't wear costumes. We were just dressed like we're dressed, singing how we sing, playing how we play.
I was sort of wearing a costume.
It was November.
I had a handlebar mustache.
It was November. We did a couple, you know, Movember type things happening.
Yeah, point is, we didn't give a shit.
Right. The point is, we didn't care.
Right. Hungover.
And we were just doing what we would do on any point of any day. Just ran like after we ran our errands and before we went out to dinner that night. There was no glamour to it. And that's the most validating thing, is if at any point we feel like we need a pick-me-up or need to know, need the reassurance that what we have is good enough, then we look to that moment and say that the biggest pop star in the world picked up on what we do most naturally and most organically, and it's not something that we need to puff up and beautify. It's something that is just as raw and good as it was that one day.
That's so good. I've said this before in the business world, and I don't know how to say this without it almost coming across. Let's take a step back. We're talking about hard work and persevering and outlasting. That was the first point you were making. And I think people hear that to the point where it loses its value. It's like, man, if I hear one more person, we just got to work hard or outwork each other. Yeah. And it almost goes in one ear and out the other because you kind of like you always hear it, right? And it's like, all right, look, I'm not saying that you have to work harder than everybody else because it's the equation for success. I think you have to take a step back further. And still, I wanted to reiterate the point that you knew what you had was good and natural. There was a belief first.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? I think some people want to go, oh, well, if I just work hard enough at something, maybe you'll have some success. But there's something here first that you had the belief, right? And the belief is that we are who we are. We do what we do. Regardless if we get affirmation from others or not, we're happy doing, and there's something here. Like, right, we didn't make it happen. Now is when the work comes.
Exactly.
Right.
It's that order, I think.
Totally. Because I remember coming to college, and I had done music my whole childhood, and I loved playing music, and I wanted to do it more than anything. But I didn't, when I was 18, I didn't have the balls to just, you say like, all right, this is what I'm going to do, solo career, I'm going to give it a shot. I didn't have the confidence either. And when I met these two guys and we started singing together, it was like, oh, this is so much better than what I was doing by myself.
Yeah.
I'm fully confident in this. And I remember there was a moment in college where the three, you know, all our friends were applying for jobs and thinking about what they were going to do after school. And we sat down and we were like, hey, are we going to do this for real? Or are we going to, is this fun? And we were all like, no, this is for real. And we're like, okay, let's find a manager. A month later, we had a manager, things started happening. And that's when the work kicked in. But it was because we had, and by that point too, we had played like 50 shows around the school. Like, you know, we knew that if we worked hard, it got better as well.
It does. I still want to go back to a point that doesn't make sense outwardly, and it's hard to say because I've said this as a sales manager in the business world. It's funny, when I taught somebody a sales presentation, I would still make more sales than a rookie rep, not because I said anything different, but I just didn't care whether they bought or not. Right. That was it. That was it. I wasn't worried about whether I was going to pay the bills or not, and what you just said was kind of the same thing. I naturally just didn't care. We did what we did because we were good at it without an expectation and what came out of it. Right. Right. But it's hard for me to go in this microphone. Guys, if you want to be successful, just don't care. There's a aspect.
No, it's like somebody was teaching me how to scalp for tickets one time. And he says the key to scalping is you have to go up to them and act like you don't need their tickets.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Well, you give them to me for 50. If you can't, whatever. And I'll hit you, go around the block. And then that sort of indifference is sort of that hard to get game attracts them more. If you need what they have so bad, then they have you.
That was your problem at Cutco.
That was totally my problem at Cutco.
That's where you went wrong.
Cutco knife sales.
I pushed so hard. Knife. You need this knife.
No, yeah, that's awesome. And I sense that in you guys as a band in general. I think a lot of people, when I first started making it happen, at first I was going to go, hey, you know, kind of the X factor, what is it, right? And I think that's been explored a little bit. But the best way I can really describe it in my journey of interviewing you guys and telling all these stories, I don't know if I figured it out, but it's usually that person up on the stage. It has nothing to do with, like you say, vocal talent, instrumental talent, but there's something about the one that quiets the room. What is it? I mean, they're all on an equal playing field. Mm-hmm. What is it? And I really believe it's that law of attraction that says, I am me, take it or leave it.
Right. Yeah.
They don't say it, right? They're not. It's not an arrogance. It's just
it's confidence.
It's confidence in something that I think everybody wants, and so therefore they're just drawn
absolutely
to it, right?
And I think it's taken us a long time to establish that, but you know, to further that, the scalping analogy. I mean, we have never sacrificed our musicianship, our artistry. Even in the cover series that we did when we were trying to attract new fans, we never wanted to do the hit song on Top 40 radio of that time.
Yeah. Unless we loved it.
Unless we loved it. We would do a song that we loved, and we didn't really care if that was a song from 50 years ago.
Right.
Or a song that came out this year, that year. It was just what song moves us, and how can we do it the way that's going to make us feel proud of it.
Yeah. And it's that genuine, yeah.
And the music that we're releasing today, we want it to exist on the radio, but we also are not going to compromise, you know, our artistry or what we love about, you know, and revere about artists of the past who we emulate to try and make these sort of sounds of the day.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is also one of the things that I think attracted Justin, because when we finally met him and we were like, all right, so how'd you see this video? He was like, I don't really know, but I got to be honest, like the cover's great. I really like the cover, but what drew me to calling you guys was then seeing the other covers, was seeing that you guys did a Paul Simon cover and then also a Frank Ocean cover. Mm. Like, I don't know any other group of people that's making music right now that could draw from both, you know, groups like that, right? Both ends of the historical spectrum.
Instead of maybe it's looking like you're just taking the top songs exactly. And now just exactly. The numbers and the, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. God, I feel like we could have this conversation for the next 4 hours. But I sensed it. They were telling me in general, like you're going to connect well with them. And I think at the end of the day, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Right. Like I don't sense you're not here selling me or being fake. Right. And I think that's what the audience is sensing. It's like, hey, you know, I connect with them before you even hit a note, right? And at the end of the day, that's what draws the audience. I mean, I'm feeling it, and I'm sure the people that are listening to, and I know. So I'm excited to watch you guys, honestly. I was excited for you guys to come in, but I want to get to these three questions. Are you
Let's
ready?
Do it.
Let's, cool. do it. Let's do it.
Maybe I'll come back. Get back on your calendar for like 2020 or something when y'all allow me to. All right, so the first question is, and no rules here. You can answer it individually, or if one of you says, oh, I have the best one, we'll just go that route. Knowing what you know now, and I feel like this is why I'm going to these questions. We're already given so much what I just call juice. Like all this has just been juice. But if you could have coffee with yourself, knowing what you know now, right when you knew, all right, music is it for me as a career, what would you tell your younger self? And kind of a follow up, do you think your younger self would listen?
If older Scott walked in to talk to younger Scott, yes. He would be so freaked out by it that he would totally listen.
Perfect.
Totally listen.
Is there anything specific, though, that's like, dude, if I could tell myself this 9 years ago, 10 years ago? Mm.
I think probably what Scott was just talking about, what you guys were both talking about, which is... And you know, maybe I would have said, look, you've still got a few years of figuring out who you are as an artist, but you already know you're good. Yeah. You wouldn't be doing this otherwise. So confidence is so much more important than like Scott was saying, like being the best guitar player. Yeah. Confidence in who you are and in that people are attracted to... those who know who they are as people. And if you show that on stage, this is going to be so cheesy, but a theater teacher used to say, if it's real to you, it's real to the audience. If you show that on stage, if you show that you are confident in everything that's happening on stage, the audience is going to pick up on that and they'll believe it. They'll believe what you're saying. They'll believe the messages.
And that confidence is... totally different from arrogance.
Yes.
I was about to point that out because you added confidence in who you are, not what you do, right? So you know you're good at what you do, but there's something about, I heard a leadership mentor one time say, a good leader is the leader that's not afraid to mess up in front of his people. That's the whole point. It's, you know, it's not a, I must be perfect, but it's this, hey, you know, even if I get up here and I bomb, I'm still okay.
Right. We've always felt really awkward about self-promoting.
Me too.
And it's just an unnatural thing to do, but we've learned how to do it without feeling like we're coming off arrogant to people, like Matt was saying, we believe in what we're doing. We know that it's good. And if we just promote this and let everything else will fall in underneath it. You know, lead with the product and not, you're not selling yourself. You're not trying to promote disingenuously.
Yeah.
That's something I think I would tell my younger self. Another thing I would tell my younger self is, my younger self, when I was 17, 18, I was, I was in high school, senior year of high school. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Nashville, and I loved, from as early as I can remember, Michael Jackson and listening to him and Stevie Wonder and Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was in my house. And not that many kids in my high school listened to Michael Jackson, especially later in Michael's life. It wasn't popular to like him, sure, as a young kid, especially in the South. So, and a lot of kids were listening to Black Keys and My Morning Jacket and Red Hot Chili Peppers, and those were kind of the cool bands to like.
Right.
And I liked them, but I didn't love them like I loved Michael. And I was really self-conscious about it. And especially as a musician, there were other musicians in my circle who were cooler than I was for liking cooler artists.
Right.
And I would just say to my younger self, like, you know, it's okay to like who you like. And now the music we're making is so influenced by those people. And all of that love I had and all of those songs I listened to are so paying off now. That I would just say, like, be true to your what moves you.
Yeah,
like,
just own it.
It's,
yeah,
it's okay to like an artist that isn't cool to like.
Yeah.
If you like them, or it's okay to like a movie that your friends don't think is cool to like. It's not going to be on anyone's dorm room wall as a poster. It's okay. Yeah. You know, and I think that if people were really honest about what moves them, I think there would be much more truth in a lot of people's art.
Scott wasn't the guy with the Pulp Fiction poster up in
his dorm room. I didn't have a Boondock Saints poster, right, in my dorm room, and yeah, everyone liked that, and it's because I like, you know, Hall & Oates and, yeah, Michael Jackson and that was what I loved, and I kind of tried to hide it and appear like I was into other music, which I was. I'm not saying that, but there's something special about those artists for me that totally influences me now.
Yeah.
And I think if I would have known that all along, I would probably be farther ahead.
Mm. Well, it's definitely a good message to your younger self, but also I think it's kind of the message, whether you directly or indirectly are doing it or not, but that, I think that's something this world needs to hear at the end of the day, all of us at all ages, right? I heard a quote that's always stuck with me. I think Kel Dodd said it, but he was just like, you know, do you until you is what they want.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, do you, you know, and not try to be everyone else, you know, right. But it is so true to be unique. And gosh, that's tough, especially growing up, I think. But that's also kind of the good thing about growing up. All right. What about the best piece of advice someone else has given you, either whether it's business, life, that you've always just kind of held on to?
My older self, one time when I was 17, gave me
walked came in back the in door. Is there any mom always told me, dad always told me. You may have already said it, and that's okay.
Right.
But
I was reading an interview one time. This is not advice that was given to me. It was given to Glenn Hansard, an artist, by Bruce Springsteen, when he was asked the same question. And Bruce Springsteen, obviously having all the success that he's had in his career, gave at the time a young Glenn Hansard, who was just starting to come into fame, or some fame, the advice of mark your accomplishments. And I've heard it before in various ways from other successful artists, but a lot of times you set out a goal for yourself, and then you hit that goal, and then when you hit it, you expect that when you hit this goal, you're going to live in it and bask in it. But when you hit it, actually, all you're thinking about is the next thing, how to make more money. If I said all I want to do is be a millionaire and I make $1 million, then the thought I would have is not I'm a millionaire now. It's how do I make more money?
Yeah.
And that's a problem. I think that if you just find a way to even small victories, take a second, acknowledge it. I think we'll all be more fulfilled.
That's awesome. So good. And you've hit the nail on the head. I heard it put this way, that there's feelings attached to any and all goals. In other words, money may be your goal, and that's fine, but it's probably not the money that you want. It's the feeling associated with having the money that right. you want. And so what is that? Does it give you a sense of significance? Like if you have more, do you feel like you're more? Is it security, right? Or whatever it is. But if anything, whatever it is your goal is, at least identify what is it really that you're intending to feel by accomplishing. And here was the key to it. If you don't feel that same feeling on the journey to accomplishing the goal, then even if you were to get it, then it won't be enough.
Totally.
That's great.
That was kind of how it was put to me. So look, it's not for me to say, hey, you should not want money and fame. No, money and fame is fine, but just tell me why.
Right.
Like, tell me what will it provide you if you have it?
Right, right.
And if you're not gaining the same fulfillment on the way to it, then like you said, you're going to get there and you're going to be severely disappointed. Honestly, I think that right. was the key.
I think thinking about that advice in terms of what we do, you know, I think it would be awesome to have a number one hit song, but if you don't enjoy writing songs,
right,
that's not going to bring you, like for us, the joy comes from when we're together and we create something that excites all of us and we birth this thing that yeah. didn't exist before. And that's the joy. Like that's what it's all about yeah. is that moment. And then like, you know, pursuing that and pushing it and making it as good as it possibly can get in, you know, having that be validated would be cool.
Sure.
But if
but you
don't,
also know it's not luck and a flash in the pan or anything. Right. Like right. you just keep doing it anyway, right?
Exactly.
So that's yeah. the thing. That's awesome. Okay. Last one, my favorite. You can actually, do I want to make this rule or do I just, I don't know. I kind of want them to answer it individually, but if y'all feel like without me causing any rifts with any relationships, finish this statement. But if you really knew me, you would know.
If you really knew me.
Individually?
You can do it individually if you go, yeah, let's go individually. We spent so much time together. I go, if you really knew, Matt.
yeah, yeah. But,
so I don't know. It's up to you guys. Does anybody have
wow.
any?
Wow.
If you really knew me, you would know that I'm unbelievably stubborn and difficult to work with sometimes.
Well, it sounds like they really know you.
We know him.
If you really knew me, you'd know that I have extremely strong opinions and I have a tough time moving them.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Okay. I'm going to answer this question because it's my answer to this question, and also because I wanted to clarify your first question, which I thought you did such a great job of pointing out, that it's not about being confident in yourself. It's being confident in what you do. If you really knew me, you would know that I have a lot of insecurities.
Oh, yeah.
I can be insecure about a lot of things, but that's why I like the stage so much, because all of that sort of goes away.
Well, I'll tell you, you probably already know this, but I'll affirm it if you want. The mere fact that you're aware and can admit that you have insecurities is that you know and are confident. I think the reality is that the people who say they're not secure are the most insecure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something to that. And I say that as a much older gentleman that had to learn that the hard way. But but believe it or not, I'll say this. Like, I'm glad you said that, because in a sense, like, I'm sorry, guys, I don't know if you're aware of this. All of us are insecure.
Exactly.
So if you're listening to this going, well, I'm not, well, then, sorry, I think you're going to have a rude awakening at some point.
Right.
But let me just say that usually your biggest weakness and insecurity, if you'll just own it and kind of acknowledge it, it can end up being your biggest strength.
Right.
You know, unless you let it control you, right? That's kind of, and I know there's a lot of us that kind of spend 98% of our time, effort, and energy hiding the 2% that we don't want anybody to know. But that 2% will keep you in handcuffs. And once you own it and just admit it and deny it, it can actually end up being your biggest strength. So like I said, that's not always easy to do or learn, but it is very freeing. So that's a great point. I'm glad you pointed that out. God, these are good. If you really knew me, I was expecting
I
love pickles,
I love chocolate. No, I was gonna go a humor route, and I'm getting. I would be made to look very superficial if I said what I was going to say.
No, you can go humor out. There's no...
All right, I'll do a lighter one just because, you know, it took a heavy, serious turn with... I'll say, if you really knew me, you'll know that I draw most of my inspiration from the Rocky movie series.
God, that's so good. Yes, I was not expecting that, but...
Yeah.
Like motivation? Like what do all we mean it. By...
Everything. Most of my... Most fashion.
He has a turtle. He eats raw eggs in the morning.
All of it.
He's got a purple cutoff like Apollo.
I don't have
any... He's an old man who teaches him everything.
I don't think any of those things are true, but everything else...
He walks around with a black hat. He bounces a ball.
I love that's you true. Said it, yeah. And then they finish all of it for you.
He's in love with a woman who works in a pet store.
Right. She's extremely shy. I had her change her name to Adrian. Is that weird?
No, not at all. Not at all. No.
He's going to develop money issues. He's got a brother.
He's going to buy a robot Adrian, for his
girlfriend's
his
got a brother who's a drunk.
No, we can go. This is the whole episode. I'm just cutting the rest of it out.
He wears a really nice jacket whenever he hikes in Siberia.
Bought a watch he couldn't afford.
Yeah.
You like to run long stairs and pants.
That's actually the first one that's true.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You like to punch big slabs of meat in a
that's
freezer.
True, too.
Yes,
that's
in a freezer.
True.
All right, nice.
Totally true.
How we could go on. I may actually come up with a list of that one. That was good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for hanging out, guys. We're getting to my favorite part, which is we will break and tune and do all that to kind of reset up. But I would... set up, you know, whatever it is you guys do want to play for us, you know, we'd love to hear it. But tell us how, why, or when, and all that good stuff, and then we'll just break and let you play it for us.
So we I know we haven't done a lot of promotion, but we did want to, you know, we got this new song that's out, but it's one of those songs we were just talking about it. We don't...
It's called Hot Damn.
It's called Hot Damn. It's out on Spotify and Apple and YouTube. It's all over, and we want to play it, but we don't really have a way of playing it in a setting like this yet.
We should mention the song like once in this whole interview.
So I had to mention the song
this summer. The whole setup with Justin. We mentioned Justin in this interview. He was on the road for 2 years after that initial tweet and meeting.
And then a baby.
Yeah, so there was some time that elapsed before we were able to get together and record together, which was the plan that he wanted to do from the beginning. He told us initially, you know, I'm at the point in my career now where I want to sort of give back, and I want to help you guys and mentor you through a lot of the things, so you sidestep a lot of the mistakes that I made, and I'd love to record with you. And not because I'm a celebrity or who I am. I think that musically, I think we are very compatible, and which is one of the things that we obviously loved most about it, the fact that it was him, not just some celebrity that retweeted
right.
it.
Yeah.
So we finally got in the studio this past summer in June and recorded a batch of songs with him and another producer and writer named Kakov, who is based in Los Angeles. And the five of us created these songs and recorded them, and Hot Damn is the first that we're releasing of that batch, and we're really excited about releasing all of the next ones that we're sort of developing a release plan now, but really all we're focused on right now is pushing this song Hot Damn as far as we can go with it. But like Matt was saying, it doesn't translate as well to this setup,
yeah.
You know, with just three voices and acoustic, so we decided...
Well, this is not necessarily, you know, at the end of the day, excuse me, you can find Hot Damn, right? Like you said, on those platforms, go listen to it.
There we
at
go.
The end of the day,
perfect.
We've talked, we've got to know each other. We just want to hear you play together.
This is something different.
Whatever
we realized that,
exactly,
and we wanted to do
one of our favorite songs by one of our favorite artists. It's a Prince song called Adore.
Absolutely. If now, that. Perfect.
Awesome.
I said, baby. Just what you mean to me.
first moment I saw you, I knew you were the one. Oh, that night I had to call you, I was wrapped until the sun came up, and telling you just how fine you look. Ooh, in a word, you were sex. And all my cool attitude you took, my body was next. You made love to me like you was afraid. Was you afraid of me? Was I your first? Was I your every fantasy? That's why until the end of time, I'll be there for you. You own my heart and mind. I truly adore you. If God one day struck me blind, your beauty I still see.
Beauty I still see.
Love's still weak to define. And just what you mean to me. When we be making love, I only hear the sound. How heavenly angel cried, tears of joy pouring down. Said I. Serious, I ain't just for kicks. No, this condition I got, oh, it's crucial. Well, you can say my burning face,
you can burn up my clothes,
you can smash up my ride,
you can smash
maybe
up
not the ride, yeah, but I got to have your face all up in the place.
Don't you think?
I like to think that I'm a man of exquisite taste.
I'm a man of exquisite taste.
100% time, set apart in a gentle lace.
Try to say
that until he'll turn, I'll be there for you until the end of time. I'll be there for you. You own my heart and mind. I truly adore you.
This has been Hits Collecting Dust. Please support this podcast and the artists featured by going to iTunes, subscribing, and leaving us a review.